Welcome to Beautiful Business, the podcast where functional evolves into beautiful. And now your host, Stephen Morris.
Today on The Beautiful Business, I'm very excited to welcome Justin Ahrens. Justin is the president and founder of the strategic and creative agency Rule 29. He's a social activist, the author of a wonderful book called Life Kerning, which I hope we get into during this conversation, the host of the podcast Design Of. He's an engaging speaker, storyteller. He's a humanitarian, a cyclist, a designer, and what I would call a human artist. Last but not least, he's a family man. He lives and works in the suburbs of Chicago. Welcome, Justin, to Beautiful Business.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for the delightful intro. Makes me sound amazing. Thank you.
Well, I would strongly suggest that I think you are pretty amazing. And I think the folks that understand what you're up to in the world would echo that particular sentiment. And I love starting off into these conversations with you describing the business that you're in and the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you for that. So on one hand, if I was to describe my business, I would say, you know, we are a branding agency and we work with all sorts of organizations, you know, small to large. We don't particularly specialize in particular in a particular industry. That's how I would describe it in one way. In another way, how I describe it is the concept of how can we as a collective at Rule 29 make creative matter? And for us, and for me personally, when I started to think about starting a business, I wanted to do something that mattered to me personally, right? That was fed my soul. I also wanted to make things, right? In design, you know, you make strategic documents to logos, to physical things, you know, all that sort of thing. But then I really wanted to make it matter to the people I was working with, which meant I didn't want to work with just anybody. And then of course, finally, I wanted to somehow make impact in the world. And so for me, I get to work at Rule 29, where we try to make creative matter by, you know, influencing culture and using our business as a force for good.
I wonder, you know, this concept of making creative matter, you know, there's in the agency industry, or what we might call the creative industry, there's always been this struggle of, you know, trying to get a seat at the grown-ups table in the world of business. And I wonder if, or to what extent perhaps, without, you know, feeding too much into the world of assumptions, is this idea of making creative matter having to do with being at the grown-ups table in the world of business? Or are you really talking about not just that definition of making creative matter, but, you know, the impact that creative can actually have on not just the world of your clients, but perhaps the larger world?
That's a great question. You're going to probably hear me say this a lot, and my answer is going to be both and. And what I mean by that is I feel that in so many ways that our culture, how we carry ourselves, how we treat each other internally, how we go about doing our business is exponentially more important than our actual output. And how I'd frame that is that if we have an amazing culture where people feel seen and safe and heard and able to, you know, question and push and poke and wander and explore, and they're fully living at, you know, at their highest level possible, right? Then what we produce as a organization, I think, is going to be extraordinary. And in that, you know, of course, there's process and things that we do, and it's not like we're just making something up out of thin air because we want to do it that way. But then I think our creative will also then be something that will be more authentic and different and innovative and attractive. So yes, do we want to do work that helps our clients, you know, matter in the world of what they're doing, whether they're a nonprofit or for profit or whatever? yes, of course, we want to do work that's really impactful and effective, but we also want to make creative matter in a way that we are only here for a limited amount of time. And what can we do to use the talents that we're given to make the most of that day, right? Or that minute, that project. And then how can we treat each other with respect, right? How can we, you know, hear each other? How can we see each other? How can we, you know, really impact all levels of what we do? And so it's something that's it's a constant, Stephen. It's something that you have to continually work on. And there are times if I was to be honest, where I just wish we would all just show up, punch in and punch out, right? There's definitely days like that. But ultimately, that's not where I want to work, right? I want to work somewhere where I work with a group of people and clients that, you know, there's this opportunity to have a conversation and explore what's possible. And then what's really cool about being a creative is that, you know, there's nothing wrong with accounting. I love accountants, right? They make sure take care of all my details and they're good at that. But I mean, think about what we get to do. It's so fascinating. You know, I get to imagine a concept and create something that will, you know, shift the way someone thinks or uses something or buys something. It's fascinating. And if you're able to do that, why wouldn't you want to do it at the highest level? And in a way that, you know, brings a sense of joy to all those working with it. So it's both and for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. You spoke about the preciousness and the gift of life and the wonderful and unique opportunity that we as sort of creatives sit within. And I would, you know, one of the ways that I have been thinking about this over the last decade or so is, you know, the unique stance that we all have as human beings in this world. And, you know, it's particularly potent in the world of, you know, creatives or entrepreneurs and even business owners and business leaders is that, you know, primarily we exist in this world called the world of possibilities, or what I call the world of possibilities. And within that, there's a lot of things to be potentially spoken about, which includes, you know, from a business leader perspective, or even from a creative perspective, you know, how is it that I'm going to move this business forward, or move this campaign forward, or move this program forward in order to positively affect the lives of the people that I'm trying to communicate and reach? And then the other side of that question is, how do we as individuals who are responsible and even have the privilege and opportunity to step up to the plate where things are at stake, where there's a lot at stake in moving and progressing this world forward? I find it to be an incredibly honorable and potent and beautiful position to stand in, and one that I never take for granted. And I think, you know, it'd be very interesting for us to go into a little bit of exploration, at least from your perspective, and I'm happy to chime in too, of, you know, what do we think the role now is of designers or creatives and those people who are in charge of working with customers and, you know, shaping or reshaping their brands, communicating, you know, their programs out into the world. How do you think that's changed over, you know, let's pick two periods of time. One, let's pick the last 20 years, which I think is very significant. And then I think it's also worth talking about over the last, you know, 2 years or 18 months.
Yeah, no, that's a good framing. I heard somewhere that the creative industry in the last 10 years has changed more than the previous 100 combined. And if you think about that, that makes a lot of sense, just with technology and with the, from social to digital, all that, you know, interaction and the way we can communicate, you know, instantly globally, you know, that makes sense to me. And then another end of the spectrum, I was talking to someone who's an expert in learning at the speed of technology. And his name is Ed Hess. He has a great book called Hyperlearning. And part of what he talks about in the future you know, we're going to have AI and a bunch of technology is going to be able to do a lot of work that, you know, humans do right now. But one of the areas that is, for lack of a better term, safe from that is creativity and thinking through ways to communicate, you know, that still feel uniquely human. I share that with you because I think that is really where we've been advancing and growing, you know, as an industry for years. You know, you started earlier talking about the seat at the table. I remember when I started in this industry, I'll say this really fast, 25, 30 years ago, you know, that was one of the things, you know, designers would be pounding their fists on the desk. Like I should be in the boardroom. I should be in the boardroom. And although I agree with them, you know, that's not something I hear anymore. You have organizations that have, you know, chief design or chief brand officers or, you know, people at the C-level, which is great. But what I see as an industry more than ever is greater responsibility. And you can pick whatever example you want to use. Let's say it's, you know, social media design, right? Or just the way that we're able to create messaging and assets that influence, you know, people's interaction. And I think what's interesting to me as a profession is that I feel like we have greater responsibility to understand the impact that we have on those that we're communicating to. And that's tricky, right? Because we're hired by other people to do that work. And so are we brave enough as a community to understand that and to, you know, understand? And again, I really believe this. I'm one of those people that believe that design can solve a lot of things, not everything, but a lot of things, and the way design thinking can impact, you know, outcomes. But in this particular situation, especially the last 2 years, think about how much messaging has influenced people's perspectives, right?
Yeah.
Both good and bad. However, I'm not picking any sides here or talking about anything in particular. I think everyone listening to this podcast could think of something. And on one hand, that's super overwhelming, but I choose to be, I'm a half full person all the time. That's also a great opportunity, right? For us to maybe impact people's perspectives and actions, even at a greater level than we ever have. If we do it, you know, honestly and authentically and, you know, with, you know, humanity in mind. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, I think it's probably the greatest time to be a creative, perhaps in history, at least in our profession, you know, that we've done. And I'm excited about, you know, what that means and incredibly curious about how I, as an individual, but also me and my team and the creative industry in general, like what we can do to, you know, continue to progress in a way that creates greater, you know, for lack of better terms, goodness, just kindness, right?
Yeah.
Authentic interaction, because it feels right now that it's not that way. And I know that isn't 100% true, but it feels that way sometimes.
It sure does. Yeah. You know, part of what you're talking to and my mind goes into, you know, this, the true potency of storytelling. And, you know, just a quick framing around that, what I mean is, you know, if you go back through the dawn of time and the, you know, early stages of man and language, you know, stories have been with us for forever. And it's, you know, it's how knowledge was passed down from one generation to the next before we had language. It was what framed and is still what frames who we see as friendly and or dangerous. Stories are, you know, you go back to, you know, things like Grimm's fairy tales and things like that, which were all moralistic tales that were a guidance, a value-based guidance system of, you know, what to and not to pay attention to. And so, you know, you can make the argument that, you know, through storytelling, it is potentially the most potent weapon that exists on the planet. And, you know, just to create further context around that, you know, no war would be created without a story that says that is the enemy. There is no politics that we would get involved with that doesn't have some story narrative bolted to it or associated with it. And when we think about this story combination designed with the visual or the expression attributes of that, it creates even deeper or greater potency. And so with that, you know, when we think about, well, what is then is the responsibility of the creative industry who are responsible for shaping and telling stories? And if we just pointed at the mindset and said, okay, well, perhaps then storytelling is the most potent weapon, positive or negative, depending on how it's used, then there's no doubt about the level of responsibility that we have as storytellers. And then it's all of a sudden a question of embracing our value system and saying, well, where do I point the skills that I have, the gifts that I have, and live in what we might call our zone of genius so that we can serve a greater set of humanity for the good of storytelling or storytelling in a way that, to use this word loosely, combats some of these negative parts of our society and shows up with, you know, a ray of hope and possibility. And as part of what I mean by, you know, entrepreneurs and creatives living in the world of possibility is that we get to shape the future that we're living ourselves into. And you've just done, in my opinion, with Rule 29 and the very expanded definition of work that you create, you've done, I think, an extraordinary job around that. So I just want to give you a massive compliment in that realm.
Oh, well, thank you. And I have to say that I accept that recognition, but also need to really make it clear that I was just one of many, right, that does that. And I think that, you know, I get the opportunity to talk to you today and enjoy that experience. But really, I'm here because of, you know, my whole team. And, you know, I think the last 2 years I've agonized over that, right? Like, am I a good leader? You know, am I a good virtual leader? You know, am I a leader who, you know, has their direction, value, you know, value, all those things. I feel like I've sat down and tried to rethink the last 2 years, but thank you for that compliment. And definitely want to say that, I accept that on behalf of my whole team because, you know, we're entering our 21st year, which I'm so grateful for. And I've been thinking a lot about the people that I've had the privilege to work with over those 21 years. And of course, not all of those relationships or circumstances were, you know, perfect, but I'm so grateful for each one of those.
It's, you know, it's worth underscoring the point that you just made, which is, you know, the reality is the work that we do in the business of telling and sharing stories, shaping, telling, and sharing stories has always been a team sport. You know, there is some mythology around, you know, the writer who holds themselves up in an enclosed cabin or room without windows and, you know, writes down something that's really potent. And I know that there's some truth to that in the world of either novels or writing books. But in the world of, you know, communication and design and brand and storytelling, it's always been a team sport. And that, in my opinion, that team also includes not just the shaping team, but the client team. And part of that begins with them entrusting us to have the megaphone and to help reshape the stories that are, you know, carving the trajectory of their business forward. And without great collaboration on that side of the conversation, and I don't mean science being against, I mean just differing perspectives and sets of responsibilities. Without great collaboration there, no matter how big that team that you have or I have or anyone else has, then there's always going to be this one-sided thing. And so part of that leans into, you know, the role of a leader at like an organization like Rule 29 is being discerning about what kinds of client relationships do you want to get involved with, and B, how you foster trust or trust gaining processes to build those relationships so that it can be a true collaboration. And I wonder what your approaches or thoughts might be around that collaborative mindset and even the identification of knowing who is an ideal or a great fit client and who isn't.
Yes. It's funny you're asking me that today of all days, because again, I think what's really great about moments like this is also defining what reality is, right? And so one of the things that we are working on constantly is to continue to streamline or make more and more tweaks to our process to really make sure that we are both, attracting and accepting and bringing the right clients in, into our world and vice versa. And, sometimes it's really easy and it goes really well. And other times it's not. And I share that story with you and talk about today because there's a client that we are working with right now that came in to us a year ago. So worked on them for nine months. And they then ended up hiring a new chief marketing officer. And I'm like, oh boy, we're going to start all over again, Mm-hmm. And, but I was like, hey, it's, this is an opportunity. And turns out, this gentleman is just incredible. We totally hit it off and they asked us to do something that was pretty gnarly when it comes to, it was about a third of our timeline or maybe half of our timeline that we normally want. But we agreed to it because they were the connection we had, the respect we had, the defining reality that we had as far as how hard this was going to be and what everyone's role needed to be made everyone on my team just completely excited to do it. And the project turned out great. Did it have bumps on the way? Absolutely. Were those bumps or were those just realistic, parts of the job that we had to think through? It's more the latter, right? We never even looked at them as bumps. We're like, okay, let's rethink that and we'll do this, and this. And it was, and Stephen, I think this is the point I'm trying to make here is it was life-giving, right? Mm, yeah. Because we love what we do. And when you can work with someone where there's alignment on that, it's so wonderful. The things that you would normally just be like, oh, I had to do this thing today, right? I don't ever want to do that thing again. doesn't even show up the same way, or if at all, when you're working in the environment I was just explaining to you. And then we have another client, which has started out really great. And then, is more in the space of, oh, I cannot wait for this to be done. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure I ever want to work with them again.
Sure.
And the difference is the collaboration, right? It's how we, go about that, how we approach it. And also it's a keen reality that it's a two-way street, right? So there's mistakes that we made on our end on the second example I was sharing with you, but there was also very little grace on the other side, which, contributed to a faster demise of the scenario, right?
Yeah.
And I go home and I think to myself, my gosh, this is our 21st year being in business. Like you think we would know better by now, right? And I think that there's so many parts of that statement that are not true, right? Like we do know better. We did all the things that we would normally do and it started out great, right? But when we stopped collaborating at a really authentic, true level, that's when things went sideways. And yeah. And we're equally guilty of that, right? And it's been especially hard, I think, the last 2 months for us. It's not been easy. I feel like we're working a lot harder these days for a lot less margin. Mm. We're working a lot harder on projects that, I don't know if the statement's true, but that maybe would be work we wouldn't be doing normally, mm-hmm. if it was felt more like, I don't even like saying this, but like it was before or more normal. And so those are the things that I think about, when I go home, like, okay, is this just our normal and we have to shift something or, do we not have the right project? And then, but it comes down to, are we interacting, communicating, collaborating in a way that's really authentic? And when you start there, you can really start to see, you know, the potential problems or the warts of the issue, right?
Yeah.
And be able to address them. And the one part of that whole conversation that sucks the most is when you realize it's you, right? And you're like, ah, oh, dang it. I'm the problem here, right? Or yeah. I didn't do this X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I think that, you know, for us and the work that we do and the work that we want to do, we want to work with organizations that understand the value of that collaboration. We want to work with organizations that see what we do as, you know, a business strategy, right? Something that's going to help them, you know, succeed or win or whatever it is that we're going for, right? Whether it's increasing, you know, donations for a nonprofit, or if it's selling more product, or if it's, you know, educating people on, you know, some subject, whatever that is, we want it to be, as you said earlier, a team sport, right? And I think if it's not, that's when I know for us, at least our team, you know, our output and our experience isn't anywhere where it should be.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point within that narrative, you know, there are points when we realize, oh, the problem is not them, it's us. You know, my wife has this great saying, she said to me a couple of weeks ago, you know, that don't you love our the spouses that know us better than we know ourselves, where she said, oh, Steve, it sounds like you need to have a come to Steve talk. And, you know, obviously she was playing off the come to Jesus conversation, which I actually love more, which is coming to ground on the truth and reality that you need to face within, you know, whatever you're showing up and doing or maybe not doing and living up to your full potential. And we find ourselves in those situations with, you know, a client situation. And, you know, we have to have that, I think, first crucial conversation with ourselves, which says something along the lines of, okay, I recognize that I am at least partially, if not fully responsible for the situation that we're in right now. And how I got here is X, Y, and Z, and, you know, do some analysis on that. I think it's really helpful to do some reflection. And then I think once you come to ground with that, then there's a second crucial conversation to have, which is the one with your team and then the one with your client. And the team one may sound very similar to the come to Steve conversation or come to Justin conversation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which is, I believe a leadership or mentorship and potentially a teaching opportunity or a learning opportunity, and even potentially a reevaluation of the values that we're committed to. And then it's a very similar conversation with the client. I used to hate these conversations and be very hesitant to have them with the client side, but I have found the more honest and open I am with the, you know, owning of responsibility, the more that they are likely to step up and own their side of the responsibility. Because as we know, and you're happily married just as I am, and my wife, Chris, and I have been together for 28 plus years, which ages me, I'm sure, but that's the way it goes. We got married at the age of 12, so do the math there.
Obviously,
which is, you know, a relationship is really all about, you know, two parties coming together to create a third mutual thing that exists between the two parties. And you're both equal collaborators in that, which is part of what I mean by the team sport thing. Because if we don't have the relationship side down, it's really tough to do good, either creative or strategic work. I wonder if you've experienced something similar in that conversation strings or, you know, come to Steve or come to Justin style conversations.
Well, first of all, I love the come to Steve conversation. That's great. I'm going to totally use that.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if I just wanted to circle on that just really quick, I feel that there is, when you kind of look at your career, at least I can just talk about mine and maybe there's some similarities here. You know, when we start our career or how we're going to approach something, right? We have whatever goals or what success we think should look like, right? When we quote unquote arrive or get there. And that's the framework that you use to, you know, carry yourself or in your business, you know, do whatever. If you're lucky, something will go terribly wrong mm-hmm. and will help you stop and shake your world up a little bit so you can say, wow, that isn't actual reality, right? And the way I thought I needed to conduct myself, or the way I needed to be a leader, or the way I needed to collaborate, et cetera. There's too much of me in it, too much of my ego in it, right? Mm, right. And not enough of otherness in it. And I think that I, hopefully for all of us at some level, is a continual lesson, but it, you know, I think at least for me early on in my career, there was a couple of really earth-shattering moments that helped me, you know, kind of reshift and realign, you know, how I needed to go about and not only carry myself as a human, but also as a leader and creative and entrepreneur, et cetera. And that's also impacted, you know, how I wanted to work with others and how I wanted to collaborate and how I wanted to, you know, just feel about what I did day in and day out. And what I realized is that I kept using the word I, right? Mm-hmm. Is the fact that, and depending on what it was, I was approaching every day with the wrong lens. And once I realized that I had the ability to be more collaborative, I had the ability to be more positive, I had the ability to go in and say, hey, I can own this and be open to this, then my world and what I did dramatically changed, as well as me realizing that, to your point, in any situation in business, for the large part, there's at least two parties involved, right?
Yeah.
And how can I be the best partner of that group, right? What can I bring to the table that makes me the best partner for that situation, whatever that is? And that's hard to do sometimes, right? It's hard to sit down and either do the work or, you know, play a role or be whatever part of that you want to be if it's all about you. Mm. And I think that you're come to Steve. Sometimes I'll have a come to Justin meeting and say, okay, do I feel this way right now because somehow Justin isn't being served, right? Somehow what I want isn't, and that's a hard conversation to have yourself. I don't say this out loud, right?
It's but really
I say
hard.
It to myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like, damn it, I'm mad because I want it to be the way I want it to be, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm throwing a stink about this whole thing because this was my idea and now it's a better idea, but I'm not getting credit for my idea. Whatever, you know, whatever conversation you have with yourself. And it's on a good day, I don't know if you can relate to this, Steve, on a good day, you giggle to yourself and be like, boy, what a knucklehead. And then you can shift and keep going. On the rougher days, at least for me, I get pretty hard on myself, right? Beat myself up a little bit and be like, oh, you know, you weren't a good partner in that situation, right? There was too much of Justin in that. So I'm not quite sure if that totally answers your question, but I think that, you know, those are the things that I've been processing and looking at and even thinking about a ton more the last 2 years, because I think one of the things that was really revealing to me is there were so many parts of, again, I can only speak for myself, of my life. I'm not going to say I took for granted, but maybe I was blind to or ignored or just assumed they would go a certain way, right? And there was things that didn't need to happen or didn't need to go the way they were going, or we didn't, you know, we could have done it differently, but we didn't take the time to look at it because of convenience, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot there.
There's a lot there. And, you know, one of the things that that dovetails into the work that I do is, and you spoke about leadership, and, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges around leadership is that there's the assumption often in many corporate cultures is that the leader has got it all together all the time and has all the answers. And your articulation just now was a demonstration of what I believe the truer reality of leadership is, which is a pursuance of questions and self-awareness and understanding of what, you know, what the motivations behind what we're doing and how we're making better decisions moving forward, or how we can make better decisions moving forward. That's a great leader, who is willing to say, I don't have it all figured out, and yet I'm going to ask the questions and especially ask the hard ones first and foremost to myself, and do my best to address those questions in an open, honest, and vulnerable way. And by the way, I'm willing to share with you, my team, and you, my client or my customer, what I'm also learning and struggling with along with this. And I think it's just it's probably the way leadership, I know it's the way leadership actually does play out. And it's probably the way leadership ought to be taught. And, you know, it feels to me like in corporate America, there should be much more leniency when it comes to allowing leaders to explore these things, because the challenge that I have found as both as a leader and one who, you know, consults with and advises business leaders is that we're doing so in public performance, and it's probably the hardest place to be seen as imperfect and vulnerable. It's probably, you know, very akin to stand-up comedy or, you know, improv type of thing. Improv is probably a really good example, because, you know, if you look at corporate America and the way that cultures work, it's very much an improv, but it's a dramatic play that's also taking place at the same time. And I think, you know, giving ourselves license to, you know, be seen as human, and I mean that with kind of a capital H and all the goodness that comes with that, is actually a beautiful way to be a leader. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me about what I see as the way that you lead is that you have this really interesting inherent willingness to take risks that benefit others. And, you know, that has to do with not just how you show up as a leader, what your articulation just was now, but also in kind of, you know, some of the projects that you guys have done over the years. And, you know, some of this is part of your give back work. And I wonder, you know, pivoting the conversation a little bit, if you want to talk a little bit about how you've stepped up into your inherent willingness to take risks to benefit others and what your approach for that is now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think part of it happened somewhat naturally. And what I mean by that is, you know, when I started, I was, you know, the designer, the head of sales, the head of strategy, the head of custodial arts, you know, I kind of did everything. Mm-hmm. And then as we grew, right, I there was less and less of those roles that I could do. And I would say probably about 10 years ago, we were, that's when we first started doing work for some nonprofits in Africa. And I started needing to go on trips there to just understand the context of what the story we were trying to tell, right? And then, you know, for anyone who's been in the developing world, especially one doing any sort of, you know, charitable or mission work, you know, it's a life-altering experience. And so I would come home, and I remember one specific time, I remember we were in the slums of Mathari, which is one of the oldest slums in Kibera, in Kenya, right next to Kibera. And I had all these images in my mind. I just couldn't figure it out. Like, I just couldn't get past that experience. And I remember two things happened within, like, it could have been a week, but it felt like it was the same day. Remember, I came home and I have four kids. And at the time they were all smaller and still at home. And I remember my one son wouldn't finish his dinner and I just lost it on him. And my wife is like, whoa, what is going on? You know, and I'm just like breaking down. I was like, I just saw, you know, 70 kids who, you know, ate one meal every 2 days, you know, and just going through this whole thing. And I just couldn't figure it out. She's like, you need to go to the grocery store. I need some groceries. So I'm going to the grocery store and then going on the aisle. And I'm just like, do you know how many different types of peanut butter there are? You know, like everything I would look at, Steve, was just like, such abundance, right? Then the next day I went and we were doing a golf club catalog, right? Beautiful piece. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, who gives a shit about a golf club catalog, right?
Right.
Now my client does, right?
Sure.
And my designers did, because they were taking great joy and pride in what they're doing, and it was beautiful, and it was all great. But something shifted in me right then, and I said, I want to, ideally, do the kind of work and be a kind of leader in all aspects of my life that I just was making the most of what I had, whatever that was. But I didn't know how to do that. And that was really overwhelming to me, because up to that moment, I'm an Enneagram 3 guy, right? So I feel like I can do things better than most people. You know, I'm a list maker, I'm a high achiever, I want people to like me, all that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, I'll just figure it out. I'll just outwork everybody, right? And I just dug myself deeper into a hole, right? And then finally, I just was sitting talking to our client who I was doing that work for in Africa, and he was just laughing. And he's just like, you know, you don't need to do this work.
Hmm.
I'm like, what do you mean? If I don't do it, you know, it's not going to happen. He's like, no, if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it, right? And there's something else greater in charge here. So, you know, what's this really about? And I realized that I had been sort of living in this context of, you know, finding my value and worth in a golf club catalog, right? Or, you know, winning a communication arts award or speaking on stage somewhere, whatever those things were. And I'm not saying those things are not valuable, but I'm saying the place that they had in my heart and in my scope of what I wanted to do, I think was larger than really mattered. And so from that point, I wanted to just commit myself to working on my self-awareness, to constantly, I wouldn't say question it, but maybe question is the right term, but just check, you know, continue to check in with myself, right? And to start, you know, changing the way we, you know, did things at Rule 29. Now, we still do work like that. I don't want someone to be listening to this and thinking, wow, they just must do work that saves the world. That is not true. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
That is not. But I think the focus has shifted is, are we doing work in a way that really is fulfilling? We're giving it what we have to give it. And we also have it in its right context, right? It isn't what defines me. And that is an ongoing process, to the point where, I check in with my team about these items. I check in with advisors about this space, and I have some really close confidants that, you know, hold me accountable to those things. But the key is, you have to be willing to share that. You have to be willing to be vulnerable to really explore that. And I don't always want to do that, right? But I think, like anything, the more you do it, I'm not going to say in this particular case, I don't think vulnerability, and I'd love your thought on this, Steve. I don't think vulnerability is something necessarily, from a habit standpoint, necessarily gets easier. It does feel like I understand the value of it. And so I want to, you know, be vulnerable more, because I see the value of what the output or the result of that vulnerability can get me to.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that completely. I don't think that vulnerability gets any easier, but it does get easier to recognize, and also easier to recognize the value and the courage it takes to be vulnerable in whatever that situation is, assuming it's not truly life-threatening, because you understand that there's something you're going through, you're moving through, and that the eureka or understanding, awareness, and the whatever the benefits that lay on the other side of processing and experiencing that vulnerability are so much more potent than the discomfort itself of being in that vulnerable situation, because it's usually quite temporary. You know, once you decide to have a, you know, a critical conversation, either with yourself, your team, or your client, or put yourself on a stage and, or, you know, even like, you know, put a book out in the world, like Life Kerning, which I want to talk about in a minute, where you're actually professing and sharing some of your beliefs. And, you know, in a way it's you're putting your ideas out there, and there's a risk in that. And I actually find a heavy aliveness within it. And I don't mean heavy in a negative way, but just a enlivening feeling of, if I am not learning, if I am not thinking deeply about what I'm doing, and in a large extent, sharing that with a group of people that, you know, would be either very public or, you know, in my, you know, readership blog or with my clients or whatever, even in this context of a podcast, if I'm not doing that, then I'm probably not living to my full potential. And so I'm, you know, I'm kind of constantly, within a healthy way, challenging myself to step up into that risk-taking and sense of vulnerability, because I know it benefits other people. You know, there's this mindset that has to do with, when you step out and, you know, risk yourself, share an idea, and kind of put yourself on the line, so to speak, it gives permission for the people around you to do the same. And I've found often that you're met with the same energy in return. And I find it to be incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So let's talk about Life Kerning. Wonderful book. And it seems to me that the thesis within it is, how do you live a life that fuels your work and work in a way that fuels your life? And, you know, it feels to me like, you know, they're talking about the great reset, the big quit, or the great resignation that we're in right now. You know, this book is perfectly timed for this kind of thing. I know it's been out for almost a decade, but
yeah.
But you know, a re-release of it seems like it's a really good idea, because you're really challenging people and even showing a path forward to how do you integrate these things, which I believe from a societal standpoint, this is where we're heading. How do I infuse the values that I have in my everyday world into the work that I do, and vice versa, and how do they integrate with one another? So I wonder if you're noticing the same thing, that, you know, this thesis within Life Kerning is even more relevant now than perhaps even it was when it came out.
Well, this is really crazy that you're asking me about this, because, you know, it's funny. I wrote it right at that break that I was just sharing with you, right? That was, I needed to pause. And of course I wasn't at some level financially where I could just, you know, take a sabbatical from life for 2 years. You know, I needed to, like most average human beings, I needed to process this as I went about and still tried to, you know, run a company and be present and do all the things that I needed to do, the responsibilities I had. But some of the things that were coming up to me when I was thinking about this was so often. So, you know, Kerning, for those who maybe aren't in the creative field. So Kerning is you know, the art of kind of adjusting space between letters, right? And so often these little tiny tweaks could make, you know, a presentation of a word just look beautiful, right? And I was sitting there one day and I was talking to someone, asking them to kern something, and I was just thinking, in some ways, that's a lot of what life is about. Is that we look around and sometimes we wanted to have these big, massive, you know, systematic changes. Again, I'm being overly dramatic, and somehow, you know, the grass is going to be greener. It's going to be amazing, and And the reality is there are times that that's probably true, right? But they're the vast minority of the time, in my opinion. But often what it is, it's these little tweaks that we need to make in our life that actually impact the way we receive something, the way we show up, right? And that made so much more sense to me. And as I was going through this, I'm like, no matter where I end up, I need to process these things a little bit at a time, which is a challenge for me because I'm an achiever. So I want to, you know, there's a problem. I'm not going to do anything but dive headfirst into it, right? And so I shared that all with you because someone actually just the other day on Instagram posted that they're reading the book. And I'm just always, I don't know if you feel the same way, but when someone reads something I write, especially that book, which was the first major, you know, kind of book I had written. I'd done other things, you know, excerpts and other books, whatever, but this was like all me. And it just felt really weird the day that I sent the final manuscript in. I was like, oh, this is really happening. And my wife is laughing at me and she's like, you've been writing this for months. I'm like, yeah, but I guess now it's really going to happen. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like, yeah, I do.
You're like, oh crap, someone's going to read this. Gosh, I hope they like it. And then you kind of go into, you could, if you wanted to, you could dive, just fall into this hole of like wonder. But so this person had put this on Instagram and I was just really touched by it. And I had just, and so I just shared it on my LinkedIn. I said, hey, you know, I'm really grateful for those that, you know, I've read this book and, you know, it's made some impact. It's really great. Maybe it's time to write a second one, which I've been working on a couple ideas for 2 years and I've not committed to it. And I got all this really wonderful feedback from people saying, yeah, you should do that. I've been waiting for, you know, part two or whatever. And that felt really nice. But then when I was thinking about it, I was like, why is it that I really want to write? Right. And if I was to be honest, the big reason is because I want to work something out in my brain. Right. Yep. And I feel very fortunate that the things that I worked out in life kerning, which I felt are true today, I think they're kind of timeless lessons. You know, it's, I try to put them in a little bit more of a modern context, but you know, for me, it's like I'm in this space again, right? Or I'm at a new, I'm not going to say inflection point, but there's this new kind of reality that I think I look around and I see all these different voices and things happen. Like with life kerning, you know, at the time, it felt like everyone around me said, we need to make big changes in our life and we got to do all these things and they have to be really dramatic. And I'd be looking at the situation from the outside in and thinking, actually, if you just tweaked this and that, like you might love what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And that's been true more often than it hasn't, right? And so anyways, I feel like I'm in that spot again.
Yeah. So I call these life intersections, and it could be like big intersections or small intersections. And you know, the cool thing about an intersection is that it forces you to pause and look around and determine both clarity on direction and movement. And, you know, I'm obviously speaking in metaphor, but in certain ways I'm not, you know, and there's nothing like, you know, committing to write a book or whatever it is, committing to give a speech that has to do with, boy, I really need to think this through. And, you know, one of the things that I've experienced, I'm not sure if you've experienced the same thing, it begins for me as a inclination or a feeling, kind of like a gut intuition. I'm like, oh, I think this thing that I'm thinking about is true. And it's showing up for me in lots of different ways. And I see it here, 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 and here. But I can't really make sense of it. And so I have to then, like, but my imagination, my sense of wonder can't withdraw from the curiosity that exists in that. It sort of keeps nagging at me. And I know it's something that I need to really look at in the eye if it keeps showing up in sort of the intersections of how I walk through the world and live my life. So I'll get inklings of evidence from, you know, a client or a conversation with a friend or, you know, a blog piece that I write or whatever. And I just love the process as much as it's sort of a love-hate relationship of the sure. difficulty of thinking through something that isn't well thought out yet, but you have a sort of a this drive towards this thing to discover the truth of the thing, and then have the ability to articulate that out to a set of somebodies that we would call an audience. I love chasing that down. And there's no doubt when you're in that moment, you are fully alive and all of your senses come into full engagement. And while it's difficult, it's also invigorating, I have found mm-hmm. at least. And so I wonder for you this, and not that I want to put you on the spot too much, but this new idea that you're thinking about, and where are you with it?
Well, it's funny. I started writing it maybe 6-7 months into, you know, the shutdown. And then I realized that it was partially therapy, right? Like I was working out ideas that, and I was kind of, well, I wouldn't say therapy, let me rephrase that. It was partly numbing, right? I was avoiding, you know, all the things that were going on in front of me. And I thought, I'm writing this in the wrong space, right? Because I was rereading it. I'm like, this isn't actually how I feel about this thing. And so I kind of put it on ice. And then literally this post just the other day, I wrote down on my, I have like a variety of lists, but my one is called the exploring list, right? Some things I want to explore. And so it said, re-explore this book idea. And the more I think about it, the more energy it's giving me, but it's like really positive, exciting energy, right? And it's that same energy that you were just talking about, which is it's super exciting. I'm like, oh boy, it's going to be hard, but like in a good way, you know? It's like when you're going to go work out, you're like, oh, this is going to be great, but man, some parts of it are going to, you know, not be awesome. But in the end, it's going to feel great when we're done. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at is I told myself that I have a little vacation coming up, you know, in a week. And when I get back, I'm going to start it.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I wish you the best of this particular adventure and all the adventures you get yourself into. And, you know, the thing that you spoke about hard work or the difficulty of like working out, the thing that I am constantly just blown away by in a positive way is our ability as human beings to do difficult things and to face adversarial situations with courage and confidence and creativity and, you know, a sense of wonder and awe about life. And, you know, the minute that we sort of retune our attention and open our heart to how we might go about leaning into the difficult things that we're faced with, it really is just such an enlivening process to go through. And I want to be respectful of time here and shift our conversation into, you know, the theme of this podcast is mm-hmm. all about beautiful business. And, you know, the wonderful thing about beauty is that it's very subjective in how people can approach it. And I wonder if I offer the term to you, a beautiful business, how would you describe that?
Yeah, thank you for that question. There's so many ways I'd want to answer this, but I would say what feels most true to me today is a beautiful business is one that has a clear idea of what they're about and focuses on a culture that those that are a part of it feel valued and safe and seen, and those that interact with it feel the same. So those are the parts of business I wake up every day and thinking as a leader, what can I do to have everyone that interacts with Rule 29 feel that way?
Yeah. I love that you brought culture into it. And, you know, maybe later on we can have a conversation about culture because I know you think a lot about that. And that's one of your core tenets at the business that you run. So are there any businesses, brands that would fit that description of a beautiful business?
You know, it's interesting, we're a B corporation. And so I constantly will kind of be on the B Corp website looking at organizations and, you know, kind of read about what they're about and, you know, kind of what they do. And I think one of the organizations that I've have a friend who's actually doing some writing for them that it sounds like would really fit kind of what I'm talking about is Patagonia. And I think they're a beautiful organization just based on how they were formed and what they're about. But then, you know, for them, they feel like they have an opportunity and a voice in this world and they use it. And I think that's a result of their team and the people who interact with them, right? They feel safe. They feel heard. They feel seen. And that can only be done authentically by standing up for things and still be around if those things exist, in my opinion. And that comes down to its culture.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Patagonia. I read about them in The Beautiful Business. And when I think of that business, that brand, and everything that they encompass, I keep coming back to the word stewardship. And, you know, which is an honorable sense of responsibility for all the things that they touch and get involved with. And that includes obviously people, the planet, and products, and, you know, things like sustainability. They have proven through action time and time again that they not only walk their talk, but they kind of go beyond and really set a new model for what a business can be from a stewardship standpoint.
I agree. That's really well said. I agree.
Yeah. And so a couple times a year, I'll publish a list to my readers called Non-Business Books for Business Leaders. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in the, you know, the wholeness of life and, you know, feeding from the trough of lots of different information and inspiration. I wonder if there's any books that you might recommend that would fit into that category.
Yeah, I'm going to give you one that was given to me by a good friend. I don't know if you know Sam Harrison, Steve, but he is a author and, you know, thinker and speaker, and I love him. And I was actually talking to him, funny enough, about the book that we were just referencing. I was, you know, he was asking me if I was going to write again. I was in the midst of writing version one, right? And I was just telling him about, you know, this work I wanted to do about being more mindful. And so he sent me the book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, Mindfulness Meditation in Everyday Life. And it was, it's written by a professor from UMass. And what I love about it is it offers you a very simple plan. Like I would just read a couple pages a day. There are these really tiny little chapters. And I would read it in the morning and I would, you know, focus on it, think about it. And I'll come back to it. And it's just one of those books that if you don't know what that term means, or you want to explore how to be still or to meditate or how to be more mindful, this is such a wonderful place to look at. It's just really wonderfully written. And it's one of those books that if I was going to underline things, right, I would underline half the page and dog ear every page. So that would be my favorite recommendation to share.
I'd love to see your marginalia there.
It's a mess.
Yeah. As it should be, right? You know, you're infusing yourself into the conversation of the book when you're writing marginalia. I love that book. I find it, you know, one of those very accessible books on mindfulness and meditation. And I'll definitely put that on the reader's list as we move forward. Justin, thanks so much for the time here today. It's always a pleasure to delve into all of what we're talking about. And, you know, there might be opportunity for us to have a round two of this because there's a bunch of things that we didn't cover.
Man, I tell you what, I would love to sit down with you and talk culture. It's one of my favorite subjects. But before I plug you having me on the show again, I just want to stop and say thank you for having me. And please keep putting out the things you're putting out in the world. It's just wonderful.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. So how can people get up with you if they want to track you down and find out more about the world of Justin?
Yeah. So it's Justin Ahrens at Justin Ahrens on I'm pretty much on everything, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram. And I'm not on TikTok yet, although my kids are trying to get me there. Maybe I'll be there sometime. And then, of course, you can go to rule29.com and learn a little bit more about us. But you can also connect to me through that site.
Awesome. Justin, thanks so much.
Thanks, my man.
Thanks for listening to Beautiful Business with Stephen Morris. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. To download a free chapter of Steve's book, The Beautiful Business, go to beautifulbusinesspodcast.com. Again, that's beautifulbusinesspodcast.com.